did.
Before I start the lesson today, I visited with Christy Gwynn on Friday. She and her husband had planned to go to Alabama for Christmas, and I noticed that they weren't able to go. And she shared with me and asked me to share with you that she was diagnosed with liver cancer. She's already started chemotherapy and will do that on a two-week cycle for the next I don't remember exactly the number. The doctor has asked her not to come to church. He says that that's not a good decision to make at this point in time in terms of exposure to other people's illnesses. And she's trying to find a way to have some contact. But I just know that it would encourage her a great deal if she had a call or a letter or a card or something of that sort, because that's obviously a very difficult situation that she's dealing with at this particular point in time. It's just things like that that stimulate the fear that is within us. People we know are getting sick. People we know lose their lives. People that we know are having problems with their jobs, with their finances, with their children, with their relationships. And if we spend all of our time focusing on those things, which are valid things to do because they are it's a very important need in our lives, then we can kind of get to that place where we can be overwhelmed literally by fear. Last year, there were some answered prayers placed on the wall over here. If we were to cover all of these walls with butcher paper, give everybody a marker, I don't think we'd have enough room for all the fears that we could contribute, the things that are concerning to us literally on a daily basis. One thing I have noticed that as you get older, your fears shift. There are more people that you love, that you're concerned about, and so there certainly is a different kind of priority there. And all of us can understand that we get to that place, or we can get to the place, where we're literally paralyzed by the fear that we're feeling. Now, when you think of those things, you think, oh, that's not a place I want to be. That's not a way I want to live. That's not the kind of experience that that I want to have in this life. And that literally feels to me at times like it can be overwhelming. One of the things that makes that worse is that there are people out there who manipulate your fear. There are people who want to sell you something, and so they're manipulating the fears that you have. There are people who want you to be in their political party, and so they're manipulating your fear about particular issues. You may have family members who attempt to manipulate you. There may be people in all kinds of situations. Your employer can certainly fall into that as well. And so we look up and we say, whoa, you know, this looks like literally a tsunami of things that are negative in my life. And this morning, I don't want us to dwell on the negatives that are there, but to start to look at ways that we deal with that. And the first thing, the first foundational issue is that's not the way God intended for you to live your life. He didn't intend for you to be constantly facing this tsunami of fears. He wanted you to know, he wants all of us to know, that we don't have to live in fear. And yet it's an exercise that we go through over and over again. We have a tendency to sometimes look at Christianity and say, well, Christianity is about the relationship that God has with his people. And that certainly is true. But all the way back in the Old Testament, God kept saying, I will be your God and you will be my people. He wanted a real relationship from the very beginning. Isaiah chapter 41, verse 10. So do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. One of the things that has been such a great improvement in our fellowship, in the 45 years that I've been in ministry, is that we've become less and less a fear-driven group. Some of you my age and older can remember going to church and it being about being fearful. More fear than last week. That was kind of the order of the day in a lot of different situations. And we've left that behind by and large. Some people miss those days. But that was something that really was a negative experience. One of the neatest parts for me about working in Houston for the years that I was there is getting an opportunity to know some of my church heroes. And one of those guys was Jimmy Allen. Jimmy Allen scared me to death in the 60s. He had a talk called What is Hell Like? And it was almost like going to see Friday the 13th. Had that same kind of response. And I was blessed to get to know him really, really well in the early 80s, late 70s. And one night we were talking and I said, you know, you scared me to death. And he just looked up at me and he said, I'm sorry, I was wrong. And he went on to talk about the new man that he was, that he didn't do that anymore, that he wasn't going to approach people that way any longer. And I had noticed in working with him in meetings that he wasn't turning out the kind of crowds that he had a decade earlier. And he understood that. And he was okay with that. Because he wanted to have a different message than the message of fear. Young people. Boy, you can go to, or used to could maybe, which is a better way to put it. You could go to rallies and various kinds of events. And so much of it would be based on fear. And the sad part about that is people have grown up to believe that God is about fear. God's not about fear. God is love. Now, does that mean there's any negative there? Yeah, and we'll talk about that to some degree. But we have to get to the place where we can distinguish between those things that are going on. Why do we even have fear in the first place? God made fear, so God has a useful purpose for fear. Look at three passages. The first one is from Psalms 111. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. Two passages from Proverbs. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, but knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. Notice the word beginning. Fear is an initial motivator. It's something that when you hear about it, like the people did at the day of Pentecost, Peter told the story and their response is, what can we do? Because they were afraid of what they had created. And Peter says, okay, there is a resolution here. And fear is that initial motivator. Now you get to that place where you say, well, let's use fear and let's use it and let's use it and let's use it. And it wears off. So what do you do then? Well, you got to create more fear. When tolerance steps in, when tolerance is a reality, then there has to be greater levels of fear in order for that motivation to take place. And so we can acknowledge the fact that God has a reason for fear, and it serves a useful purpose for us. It can make us very concerned. It can make us very aware of our situation and our circumstances. Can you ride fear to heaven? Well, could you ride a unicycle to Argentina? You probably could. But wouldn't it be a whole lot easier to fly on an airplane? God's given us this positive relationship. And he said, I want to relate to you on this basis. And we can choose to relate to him on another basis, but it's not the one that he has in mind for us. You look at the teaching of Jesus. Jesus, how many times in Scripture does Jesus say, do not be afraid? At least a dozen that I can find. Some of them are duplicates. He knew that what he was going to say or what he was going to do could create fear. In John chapter 14, this is right before the events of the final days of Jesus' life. Peace I leave with you, my peace I give you. I do not give to you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not be afraid. He knew those disciples were going to be afraid.
He knew they were going to be afraid when he was taken prisoner. He knew they were going to be afraid when the Romans were trumping up charges against him. He knew that they were going to be afraid when they saw him be crucified. He even knew they were going to be afraid when they saw him risen in glory. Those were going to create fear. And he's saying, don't be fearful. In Mark chapter 4, starting in verse 35 and going through verse 41, we have this incident that takes place in Jesus stilling the storm. And this particular version that comes from Mark has some interesting language. It says, that day when evening came, he said to his disciples, let's go over to the other side. Leaving the crowd behind, they took him along just as he was in a boat. There were also other boats with him. A furious squall came up and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. That still happens to this day. You can go to YouTube and look up, I'm trying to think of the exact word, storms in the Sea of Galilee would get you there, but intense storms, I think, is the way it is. And they'll actually show film from last year where these storms just suddenly break out. Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and said to him, teacher, don't you care if we drown? He got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the waves, quiet, be still. Then the wind died down and was completely calm. Lord, what can we do about this? Well, let me show you. Stop. And it stopped. I always try to think of Jesus going to my front door and as we're in the middle of a tornado warning, and he just says, stop. Can you imagine what that would do if you just thought, boy, this guy can change the weather? He said to his disciples, and here's the key passage, why are you still afraid? Do you still have no faith? They were terrified and ask each other, who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him. Why are you so afraid? It doesn't actually say this in the passage, but the assumption is clearly there. You've got the Son of God with you. Why would you be fearful? And that's exactly the same response that he would give to us today. Why are you so afraid? You've got God's Son with you across this whole process. Well, I don't have much time left, and in the next 5 minutes, I want to try to do a whole bunch of stuff, but I do want to point these passages out. Four passages from the book of Psalms that maybe give us a perspective on how we deal with our fear. The first one is from Psalms 27, verse 1. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? It's acknowledgement, not only that God has the strength, but the strength through God is available to us. It's a little song, and I don't know the whole song. I wish I did. That when I am afraid, I will trust in you. I will trust in you. That's just a psalm. Psalm 56:3. When I am afraid, I'll put my trust in you. And the implication there is it's a choice. We can either run and hide. We can either be overwhelmed. Or we can say, no, God, I'm going to choose to trust you. As they would say, as Joshua would say, every one of your promises has come true. I can trust your record. Psalms 118, verses 6 and 7. The Lord is with me. I'll not be afraid. What can mere mortals do to me? The Lord is with me. He is my helper. I look in triumph on my enemies. How many of the things we're fearful of relate only to this physical life? That's all people can do to us. Can they fire you from your job? Sure. Can they throw you in jail? Sure. Can they take away this? Can they take away that? Can they threaten your life? They can do all of those things, but God whispers in our ear, but I've taken. So what if it happens in this life? I've already secured what happens in the much more important experience of eternal life. And then Psalms 34, verse 4, I sought the Lord and he answered me. He delivered me from all my fears. Satan doesn't wait to be invited to bring fears into our lives. And he uses a technique, he and his agents, of bringing fear constantly before us. We have to choose whether we're going to accept that or whether we're going to seek what God has to say and what God has to provide. Fear serves a useful purpose. When we lived in Houston, there was a guy in our congregation there that had been a college football player. He had been involved in a serious industrial accident, and basically he didn't have any pain sensation from the waist down. And he loved to play flag football on Sunday afternoons. A group of guys would get together and play flag football. He was always getting hurt. He was always being hurt seriously because he didn't know he had been injured. It wasn't until somebody would see something and say, "Tim, what's the matter with your knee there? What's the matter? Do you know you have blood running down your leg?" All these kind of things. And he didn't have any pain indications. We need fear. We need to be aware that this could create concern. This could create danger. This is something we have to make a choice about. We live in a world where physically constructed where we have a fight or flight response. And that's really hard for us because so many of the things that happen in this world today, neither of those things are valid choices. Somebody at your job says, "I think you need to do this better." You can't punch them in the nose or just run down the road. Those are the two choices that your body thinks of. In our time, we have to make other choices than that. And we live in a world where God is willing to help us as we make a third, sometimes more difficult choice. Two passages in the lesson is yours. Luke 1:74 through 75. The purpose of Jesus is to rescue us from the hand of our enemies and to enable us to serve him without fear. And Isaiah 41, "I am the Lord your God who takes hold of your right hand and says to you, do not fear, I will help you." Over and over and over we get to that place where it's really a question of faith over fear. You boil it down to its basic. What is it? Yeah, there's plenty of reasons to be fearful. But God comes along and he says, there are plenty of reasons to lean on faith as well. I hope for the new year, that your approach to fear can be different. I hope that you can leave some of that behind. Do we get to the place where we're never fearful? No, because it serves a useful purpose. But the minute we feel that fear, then we have to decide how we're going to deal with it and what our response is going to be. Are we going to be overwhelmed by it? Or are we going to follow God's instruction and teaching and say, there's a way to manage this. And there's a way to deal this faithfully. I don't know about you, but that's the part I'd like to be doing, recognizing and leaning life upon. If there's some way we could help you this morning, we'd be glad to. If there are private things that you need to do between you and your God, we would encourage you to do those things as well. If there's something publicly, please let us know while we sing this song together.